Hey everyone, welcome to Webcology on WMR.fm. It's the middle of July, July the 10th, 2025. This is Jim Hedger of Digital Always Media and Christine Chackinger from Slates Without Walls.
Hey everybody.
And before we start the show, congratulations are in order. Jim Boykin and the Internet Ninjas have kind of sold themselves. It's sort of a sale and sort of a merger, but Previsible has acquired the Internet Marketing Ninjas in what has to be a huge but here until undisclosed deal.
Yeah, and it has two of the people I used to work with at Search Metrics at the lead of Previsible. There's Jordan, I can't say Jordan's last name, Jordan Keane. And Tyson Stockton and David Bell. I don't know David Bell, I don't believe. So yeah, it's interesting. It's going to be part merger, like you said, part sale. They're going to work together still. They're going to maintain their own operations, but they are going to be merged as a brand, I guess is the right way to say it.
Well, yeah, as a brand, and most importantly, incredibly juicy client lists are going to start getting merged together, and the businesses will be optimized. And most importantly, Internet or SEO pioneer Jim Boykin has a off ramp to the rest of his life. He's built a remarkable company and made a whole bunch of SEOs employed and wealthy. He's a really wonderful guy, and great congratulations to him.
Yeah, I think this is awesome. And some of their client list includes Yelp, HP, Atlassian, Reddit, Best Buy, and Intuit. So it's going to be a very powerful brand.
Oh, absolutely. So again, congratulations. Congratulations, Boykin. You're buying drinks from now on, dude. I don't know Jordan Keone or Tyson Stockton.
Great guys.
Yeah, right on. I'm looking forward to getting to know them as time goes on. And the cool thing is the ninjas, as you know them, are still around. The team's not getting broken up. They're not getting bought out or forced out as far as we know. The Ninjas will still be there, and Smarty will still be there. The whole crew's still going to be there, but they're now Previsible.
And a true testament to Jim's leadership, the average employee tenure at Internet Marketing Ninjas is 14 years.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
He's hired a lot of people in the industry. Yep. He tried to hire me twice, and best decision and worst decision of my career was to not go work for Boykin.
Very true.
I think a lot of people can see that. I really wish I had in hindsight, and I'm really glad I didn't, because I've had remarkable freedom in the meantime.
Okay. Well, congratulations, Jim.
Yeah, excellent. Yeah. Congratulations, bro. You absolutely deserve it. This 2025 core update started rolling out last week, finally came around. And anecdotal evidence, just observational evidence, and we have to wait until the core update is finished running. So don't all grab your breath and grab your hopes up all at once. But some partial HCU recoveries.
Yeah, they're showing some Glenn Gabby and we're showing charts on Twitter or Twixter. And it looks like they're getting some partial recovery. I do have a client that was hit by an HCU, and he has a partial. It's not a complete recovery. They look like they're about 20 to 30% of the original. So did Glenn's graphs. But that's good news, because as we all know, the HCU was an unrecoverable algorithm because it was broken. So it looks like they're actually starting to make fixes into it. Hopefully by the end of this core update, they'll get more than 20 or 30% though, because these sites, most people, a lot of people, I shouldn't say most, but a lot of them walked away from them because they've been dead in the water since 2023.
Yeah.
But it is good to see that at least they're undoing the damage, because maybe then people could sell their, sell their domains, with the reassurance that there's nothing left on them. So
I went to a former client site, a once major publisher, an independent major publisher in a very niche space, and they got hit by a number of issues over the years, but they certainly got hit by the helpful content update. And I saw an increase in visibility. We're gonna be talking like this as SEOs in the future. I saw an increase in visibility, a lot more impression activity, big spike in the purple line, but not so much of a spike in the clicks, actual visits to the website. So that suggests to me that a lot of information from those websites is now becoming available in Google search. How it's becoming available is another question. And the most important one, are they drawing the clicks and thus making their money?
Yeah, very true.
But it could be happening.
Yeah, that would be such a great thing for those people. Even if they walked away from the domains, now they can sell them. You can't sell them when they're in a downturn like that, you know, at least not ethically. So I hope that is. It was a horrible, horrible algorithm that destroyed many people's solo entrepreneurs' careers. So it'll be great to see if this is recovery.
Okay. Google Search Console performance. You know how Google looks at the average SERP ranking of either a page or all your pages against a specific keyword? If you see weird drops in ranking or even like just suddenly gaps in rankings in Search Console when looking at the average rankings, which by the way are really hard to actually gauge success through, unless you do a deep dive into them. But if you do see weirdness there,
GSC shows average SERP rankings.
I hate to hear this.
Drops or gaps.
What is this?
To various factors like algorithm updates.
So I just got a new phone. Brand new phone.
Oh, okay.
Android phone. And that was it explaining Google Search Console to me, because I said Google Search Console. And
oh, no.
I said it in such a way that I said, hey, Google, or something like that. And it just gave me its answer.
Yeah,
I have to turn that off.
Yeah, you probably want to turn
that off. Unless it happened at a wedding or a funeral or something.
so people know, the average rank position is really like an average on the page. If you're on the page three times, it'll look at, let's say, in number one position, then you're like in a knowledge graph. And people also ask, you'll have a lower score for that. It'll be like 1.56 or whatever. So what we're seeing, though, is a complete drop off of the ranking. But in one of the graphs that Juan Vargas showed in this SEO Roundtable article Barry Schwartz wrote, it's a complete drop off, and yet impressions are a complete opposite, like opposite picture and increases, and then clicks are exactly the same. So this is definitely probably a bug. They're seeing complete drop-offs of the position, but with the same increase in impressions. They almost mirror each other exactly.
My theory on this is it's not a bug, it's a flaw. Okay.
That's possible, sure.
So I mean, think about this for a second. Like, how does Google, if you come up as part of an AI overview or in AI mode now, what position are you in? Yeah, according to Google, you're in position number one. But how many people are in position number one? And what if you're in position number one twice? How does Google compute that and figure it out and report it back to you?
Yeah, it's true.
This ain't a bug. It's a flaw.
And how it's reporting, you mean?
Well, yeah. I mean, the Google Search Console wasn't built to deal with your web page appearing, a page in your domain appearing in the same position one twice.
Yeah, that would make sense. And so people understand, the difference between a flaw and a bug is there's a flaw in the logic of the GSC programming versus there's just a bug that somebody put in an error.
Yeah,
so it's a little bit of difference.
Broken. It's just like broken.
Yeah, it's broken in its brain. The logic is broken. I think you're probably right. That makes sense why we're seeing mirrors in some of the cases.
Okay, well, the impressions versus on that, and this evens out that other $10 bet.
Yeah.
So that's going to make $20. Right on.
Go ahead.
Okay, Google Ads Editor version, the newest version, 2.10, has 20 user features. Manual set user features removed. I'm sorry, it came out with
new. Yeah, new features.
It has 20 new user features in it.
So just a couple of things, because we couldn't possibly go through all these. Just add preview URLs and CSV sheets export. Add preview for more ad types. Link checker tool. Streamline campaign construction flow. Target frequency, and goes on and on. So you want to go to Search Engine Roundtable. Look for the Google Ads Editor version 2.10 is out. article and read all of them there if this is something that is important to you. Oh, one thing we have to do, this is our announcement section. I think we forgot to say that. One thing that we have to do before we move out of announcements, Jim, do you know what it is?
We got to thank our sponsors because we got so excited about all the neat stuff that was happening in the world.
For those that know, in the top of our grid, it says sponsors don't skip, and we unfortunately often do that. So do you want to thank our sponsors there, Jim?
I would like to, on behalf of Christine and me and all of the listeners, Audience Key, Wix Studio, thank you so much. Folks, if you're grinding out content, lots and lots and lots of content, and you want to have a comparative view of how it's faring and also how your content can actually build traffic through your website, check out Audience Key. It'll blow your mind. And if you want to do it in an environment that's like super easy to work in, check out Wix Studio. These things actually can kind of go hand in hand.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. Very much. And another thing real quick about Audience Key that's really nice is if you have Shopify, it can work on the edge to add proper categories for you for your products, which is kind of huge.
Okay, so when you do work with Audience Key or Wix Studio or anything at all, you're probably doing it in a Chromium browser. If you're doing it on your Microsoft Edge browser or your Google Chrome browser, or even Firefox, you're still working in the Chromium environment. And there's going to be two new additions possibly to the Chromium environment. One of them is going to be coming from OpenAI. The other one's going to be coming from Perplexity, both of whom want to build their own browsers.
Yes. I believe that the Perplexity one is, I think Perplexity may already be built. They launched one called Comet. But it's $200 a month for subscribers. This isn't like a free browser like you're used to.
Well the browser comes with your $200 a month account. So you got to be a $200 subscriber, and you get the browser.
A subscriber for $200 a month, you have to up to $200 a month. Otherwise, if you're paying $200 a month, yes, you'll get this Comet browser, and it's gonna use its own search engine. Remember, these all come with search engines. And then it's going to use a Chromium browser, and it will be giving you information, based on like you already use it for. And then OpenAI is planning to launch an AI web browser in the coming weeks, according to Reuters. The OpenAI might also build an agent instead of browser, allowing it to book reservations, fill out forms, and complete other tasks on the user's behalf with an agentic future. We'll get into another story in a minute on why these might not be your best options. That's also on a paid account, the OpenAI one, not the $20 a month either.
Browsers are weird things, eh? I mean, like, and incidentally, we may be thinking of them in an old world sort of way, as I use my Chrome browser to do a multiple set of things in. And maybe in the near future, browsers become tools or part of tools. You use this browser with this tool set and that browser with that tool set.
Yeah, it definitely could be. And I'm not really sure. Well, I guess they do understand. So the reason they would be doing a browser instead of just going to their sites like you do now would be because they want to add this agentic agent that's going to do tasks for you. So I'll be honest, since an OpenAI does no security checks on its plugins, I'm not sure how much I would trust it to have access to things on my system, but that's another story we're going to come to in a minute.
Well, one thing I can say for sure, if you are going to be developing a new tool, developing a new way of doing things, new protocols, or if you're a user who's going to be adopting something, don't get involved in a tool set made out of spite. So Perplexity's Comet was apparently built because they went to the folks at Google and said, hey, we want to be your walk-in chatbot, and Google went no, and so pulled the top of the escalator sort of thing and said, well, I'm going to do it anyway, and now we're here.
Yeah, and most of the people that started Perplexity came from Google, so that's probably why they're hoping to be able to work with them directly. But yeah, they said no, which of course they would say no.
given the state of their Gemini dreams, yeah, they had to say no.
Yeah, exactly. And Perplexity is backed by NVIDIA. So they're a NVIDIA company. And they Yeah, I mean, I guess I could see why they were hoping, but I don't think it's a lot, though. We'll have a browser for everything.
Indeed. But again, we think of browsers as offices that we work in. I think a lot of work is going to become a lot more portable and a lot more application specific. Like right now, Christine, you work on websites, and there's a huge variety in the websites that you work in. But at the end of the day, a website is a website is a website, right? You work in the same environment with the same factors. I mean, again, every website and every business is different. All that is pre-assumed. But our jobs as SEOs is fairly mundane. That's changing a lot. Work is becoming a lot more portable and a lot more focused on specific tasks. And again, I think that's where we're going to be creating environments that are built, are task built.
Well, Comet positions itself, this is according to Benzinga, can't say that well, as an artificial intelligence powered browser that transforms browsing into thinking. Of course, we know these don't think, so we don't want to assume it's like human thinking. According to Perplexity's announcement, the browser integrates conversational AI capabilities, allowing the user to ask questions directly without traditional search navigation. The company describes a shift as moving from navigation to cognition. Well, that's an overstatement, big overstatement. The research shows they don't think at all. but isn't this just what Google's doing already with Gemini?
Well, I mean, ultimately, when you have when you have the great cloud summarize stuff for you, read everything and then boil it down to understandable chunks for you, you are letting something else do the thinking for you. And it doesn't matter what platform you're using, unless it's blatantly racist like Grok. We'll get to that crap in a few minutes. Yeah. It doesn't matter what platform you're using. It's doing essentially the same thing, and you're seeding essentially the same processes to it.
Yeah, but Perplexity, this just sounds like what AI mode is, correct?
But pretty much, yes. Yeah. I think so. I mean,
Perplexity
is AI mode. Well, it is innocent because, how to say this, AI mode is more encompassing than this. Perplexity sounds like you're having a long-term conversation.
True. Right.
Sounds like you're having a long-term conversation with something. It's your friend. It's your information valet. It's probably being built to be your do-it agents. Go fix me up with tickets to Paris, hotel, and a week's itinerary. Go do that for me. Here's my credit card. It's probably setting itself up to do stuff like that. Where Google, on the other hand, Google is setting itself up to absolutely know you and be part of your everything environment. Google's putting AI mode into, I can't think of anything it's not putting AI mode. It's faster to talk about stuff AI mode's not going into.
Yeah, that's very true.
And so why would Google do that, given they're all about your information? Because Google's services are meant to do everything for you now.
Yeah.
I think it's much
that's the hopes and the dreams of Google and Bing.
That's what they're building Gemini for. Specifically, they're building Gemini to take over and run your information sphere for you.
Right. Yeah, they are. They definitely are. Comet launches initially for Perplexity Max subscribers with invite-only access rolling out for the summer. If you're like, oh, I'm so excited, I get to use it, you might have to wait. But you also have to be paying $200 a month. So just keep that in mind.
Life is expensive if you want to facilitate it, eh?
Yeah, exactly.
Data valets have to eat. They don't have to really do much of anything, but they don't come cheap. Yep. Okay.
I was just gonna say there are some considerations though if you're gonna do this, which is Perplexity had some critiques on the privacy part of these kind of things. So not just Perplexity, this would be any of these types of browsers, and that is that it's going to have a lot of personal information on you without the same kind of safeguards that you have with like Google's, you know, Google's restrictions on it can do cookies, but you know, like years ago we lost our actual direct keywords because they became a privacy issue in the EU, right? So these won't be run the same way. So you want to be considerate that when you, if you use these things, they definitely could have privacy issues. And the difference is once it goes into a large language model, it doesn't come out of the large language model. So you, if they're ingesting anything that you're doing and storing it, then that would be inside the large language model. And that would be a big profile on you as well.
Everything you do with an LLM, with a chatbot, is in one way or another training that LLM. Even it may be training it in a meta sense where your words and ideas, concepts are being incorporated into the greater soup bowl, soup pot. Or you could be training it to personalize on you, your habits, your ideas, the way you construct sentences, the way you think, and your needs, desires, etc. No matter what, you're training the LLM.
Right. And as the
it don't go away.
Right. And as it says in the article here, that if you go to the Comet website, they talk about three values for Comet: personal, learns how you think, collaborates in your research, keeps your digital life organized, powerful, quickly understand anything you see in any language from any perspective, ask it to summarize, shop, schedule, et cetera. Productive, stay focused and keep your flow without switching tasks or tabs, et cetera. Nothing about privacy at all.
Everything you're saying, because it comes back to you and the stuff that you've written and the stuff that you've thought, everything you're saying denies privacy. The privacy that you and I understand isn't sacrosanct anymore and actually not possible in this new environment.
Exactly, because the large language model can't respond to all these things if it is not doing that. Also, that uses the Chromium, the same extensions as Google. So they've actually researched it and shown that it goes a lot more in depth than even like cookies do. And so you just want to just be aware of that if you're going to use it, especially if you use it for anything personal.
So. Yeah, indeed. Moving along, it's something really weighty to think about. I think for a lot of people who never actually had the kind of privacy that you understand, Christine, that boat's already sailed. They don't even understand it. I worry about has never been part of some people's lives. That's hard to wrap my head around. But the more I think about it, the more true it is.
I think this is way more intrusive, though, than other things we've had to contend with. So we've probably
upward steps, plateaus, suddenly yeah. Rocket leap. But yeah, it's all been a move towards this.
Yeah. So people just want to be aware that they do have very little privacy protection in these models. So if they're going to use them for this kind of in-depth discussion.
I know that some younger people in the political circles that I run in, the political party or the youth wing I work with, never grew up in a time that everything wasn't recorded. I tell them about updates we had when we were kids and the stuff we got away with, and it's just, you know, we seemed like such really bad kids and we weren't, but it's mind-boggling what we were able to get away with because there was no social media, there was no instant accountability. If you got caught, you got in trouble, but you weren't going to get caught because it was really like stupid. But today, the world is pretty stupid for you.
True. It's amazing though how good we were, because we were literally told to leave the house as good as we ate our breakfast and don't come back till dinner.
Maybe it's that we weren't bad. It's just that all that stuff that we were doing isn't actually intrinsically bad. It's just been moralized into being thought of as bad.
We didn't do anything bad. I would say it's amazing with all that freedom that we didn't get into more bad stuff.
I did lots of bad stuff. It just wasn't bad. Okay, we got to move on. We got a whole bunch more stories.
Yes.
Speaking of privacy, like the people in Europe, they remember the good old days. They really tried to hold on very hard to it. And Google's AI overviews have been hit by antitrust complaints from independent publishers who are, you know, suddenly living in an enforced no-click environment.
Yeah, and they say because there's no way to opt out of it, that is a problem, and they are, there's an antitrust complaint, another antitrust complaint. Remember we said, we talked about this a couple months ago, with AI overviews and AI mode, I'm like, yeah, it feels like an antitrust suit coming. Well, we have one. And it's the Independent Publishers Alliance, put out a document on June 30th that Google abuses its market power in online search. Truly, how are they going to argue against that? I don't know. But it takes up the top space. Search results have been getting worse, for at least my experience. That's anecdotal, but for mine. And anyway, the core Google's core search engine service is misusing web content for Google AI, overabusing Google search, which have caused and continue to cause significant harm to publishers, including news publishers, in the form of traffic, readership, and revenue loss. And that's 100% accurate. We know that from studies done and publishers who have filed lawsuits here. So I don't know, you know, where this is going to go with the UK, but they do tend to be pretty successful in these types of cases. And this is more blatant than anything else they've done before, because that AI overview really does steal the click, and we know that.
Well, have we got a story for those publishers who are concerned that AI overviews are taking all their information? So Internet Publishers Alliance dated their document June 30th. A couple of days later, and it has nothing to do with the Internet Publishers Alliance's document, Cloudflare CEO Matt Prince wrote on July 3rd that Google's Gemini is going to be blocked by default. Now, last week we reported that Cloudflare for new websites has a new settings policy. You can set to allow AI bots to crawl your site as much as they want. You can block them entirely, or you can let them in, but charge them admission. Cloudflare is the first content delivery network to do this. They're also the largest content delivery in the network, delivering arguably 35% of pages online, depending on whose stats you're reading. No one else has done this yet, but Cloudflare has just outright banned Gemini. Gemini's not getting in.
You know, Matthew Prince is one of my new favorite people. You know, just not that I don't know if I 100% agree with all the decisions here, but I will say at least someone's trying. So Cloudflare is, as you said, it's blocking Gemini. And an article in Gizmodo, it says that, you know, they see themselves as the watchdog for the AI economy and they're not afraid to flex their muscle. And he even says about Google that the worst case will pass a law somewhere that requires them to break out of their crawlers and then announce all routes to their crawlers from there. And that wouldn't be too hard. But I'm hopeful it won't need to come to that, he said in another post. He did a whole Twitter thread and discussion with people, a lot of people in the SEO industry. So it will be interesting to see what happens, because, you know, if it does do 20%, 30%, depending on who you read, of the traffic on the internet. So, you know,
I'm working with a couple really big publishers right now. I mean, staggering big publishers, both of whom should have the heft to hold the AI companies to some sort of fee for information relationship, because they are producing the information that we rely on to know what's going on in the world. For real, these are the real deal guys. They should have the heft, and they don't. Unless they're a handful of competitors who also very heftily weighty, important, well-known public information corporations, unless they join in the party, they all have to do it in unison. They all have to have solidarity, and they all have to say to much bigger data houses who are like funded in the billions of dollars. And there's a big disparity here between the hundreds of millions of dollars in the large-scale publishing world and the billions of dollars in the large-scale tech world. Big disparity here. Power disparity.
Yeah, very big. And I do appreciate what Prince is doing. It says that further down the Gizmodo article, that he reveals that the rules of engagement are shifting in real time. Mm-hmm. AI companies once used to quietly hoovering up the web may soon need to negotiate publicly, transparently, and on creator-friendly terms. So in short, mm-hmm. Cloudflare wants to protect the very idea that content has value. Think of your Cloudflare as a massive intelligent security guard and express delivery service for your website. When someone tries to access the site, their request often goes to Cloudflare's global network first. Cloudflare then can block malicious traffic, speed up content delivery, and crucially, identify and control specific types of automated bots, like AI crawlers, before they ever reach your website's actual server. In the emergence, in the emerging AI arms race, that makes Cloudflare one of the most important gatekeepers on the internet, and they're not wrong. And you and I both know that some sites are getting hit so badly by these AI bots that they almost have DDoS attacks.
Well, and whose network that's happening on. That's happening on like Cloudflare. So it's a problem.
That's why they're implementing these tactics. But, you know, I have to say, like I said, if you don't 100% agree, I get that. But Google gave people no way out, because the only way out is not to be in Google search. And Google still delivers 90% of the internet, you know, traffic in the United States, and 95% or more overseas.
You can't keep yourself entirely out of AI overviews, and you can't keep yourself from training Google AI unless you're going to block it entirely. You can block the specific crawler that Gemini trains on. There is a specific crawler that you can say, hey, yo, in your robot text files, stay the heck out, and you can do that. So that's coming custom now. But see, we're living in an era where these tech billionaires are making decisions for us, and Matt Prince is making decisions on one side of the table, and the AI companies are making decisions on another side of the table. And all I want to do is market tools, recreation supplies, you know, consumer goods to people who want to buy them online and not have to leave their house to go get them. That's all I want to do. I need to get my information visible. So now Matthew Prince has told me I have to take extra steps to allow Gemini, which is basically going to be informing everything to do with Google users, have to do with what they're doing. I have to take a special allowance or charge Google for this. I have to try to explain this to my clients.
Well, no, you don't do the direct charging. They do it on the server level.
Well, indeed, but we have to make it. But now Gemini is blocked. So if we want it unblocked, we have to go manually unblock it. This one site I'm thinking of in particular, if it does that, it will actually have to negotiate with Cloudflare about doing it. So Cloudflare probably won't let them just do it, because it's going to suddenly possibly introduce problems to their network, like being effectively DDoSed. It's a catch-22, and again, this is the weirdest thing: is we're being held prisoner by people who take the prisoner's dilemma as a mental puzzle for breakfast. Like, there's not going to be virtuous behavior by every actor in this field, and if one actor steps away from the others, then it all falls apart. It's tough. I love what he's doing, but it bugs me at the same time.
Well, I appreciate, you know, it's going to be a trial by error kind of thing. He's going to do what he's doing, and he's going to adjust as he goes forward. I would suggest, not that he probably listens to us, but that he get a group of SEOs that have been around for a while to help him understand the effects on websites by what's happening. But really, the gauntlet was thrown by Google when they didn't separate the crawler from your appearance in Google search. And then, yes, you have to be trained on, but you know, as long as they know about you, that's not necessarily always true. But if you have e-commerce, it is true. But it's a very complex world.
Your check, your cooperative. As a farmer-owned lender, Farm Credit Mid-America shares the success of the cooperative with our customers, which is why we've returned more than $1.5 billion back to our customer owners over the last 9 years. It's proof being a part of our cooperative pays. Patronage is an annual decision made by the board of directors to return earnings to eligible customers. To learn more about patronage and eligibility, visit fcma.com/patronage.
Life is a workout, and Smoothie King is here to help you power through. Whether you're grinding out bicep curls, or muscling the couch across the living room, crushing morning miles, or sprinting through back-to-back meetings, Smoothie King has fuel to help you maximize your workouts, own your recovery, and elevate your game. Give your body the energy, protein, and power it needs with a lineup of delicious smoothies made to help you conquer your goals. Only at Smoothie King.
I don't feel like the large language model companies gave a lot of thought to.
Well, do you remember when SEO became so complicated that we started siloing it into different, you know, schools or different practices within the greater field of SEO? There was just so much going on that there's no way that one individual could call themselves an expert in every part of the practice now. I think it's the same thing with LLMs, generative AI, generative results, branding and training in this new environment. There are so many different factors to consider, many of which contradict each other. If you do one, you can't do the other, but you need to do both. There's a catch-22 every step you take. So there's a lot of, like you said, trial by error that's going to happen, and hopefully we'll standardize our way through this, like, I don't know, by October.
I have to give Prince credit, though. He's the first one with power and heft enough to do something.
20 to 35% of web pages on the web is power and heft. Yeah,
exactly. And he's actually trying to help. So, and he takes feedback very well. He's on Twitter. People are having discussions with him. Just regular SEOs have mentioned things to him. So I do appreciate that he seems to be measured in his approach, taking feedback where he needs to maybe alter it, and also feels he has to have to maybe push Google to have to do things that it doesn't normally have to do.
Just because 20 to 35% of the domains that are actually hosted out there go through the delivery network, content delivery network, Cloudflare, doesn't mean that that their owners all agree with him unanimously.
Oh, of course not. That would never be the case. But I do appreciate his trying, though.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Okay, this story is going to make me mad.
You want me to cover it?
Well, no, because I'm really mad about this. And if I go too full flight, they'll pull me back as somebody really, 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 really should with Grok.
Let me just give the context first, though, before you get to the lead-in. The context is that Elon Musk decided that Grok was too, these are the quotes, woke, and he wanted to unwoke Grok. And then what he did leads us to the story today, which Jim will start now.
Okay, so he thought that Grok was too woke. The problem with Grok was, of all the large language models out there, Grok was actually weirdly probably the most honest if you asked a direct political question.
Yeah,
it was saying stuff that would make Donald Trump or Elon Musk or any of the people around them look stupid.
But it was factual.
Yeah, for good reason, I think, because some of the stuff they were doing is actually quite stupid. Idiotology level stupid. So this is embarrassing. Your own creation, your Frankenstein's monster, so to speak, is dissing you in public really badly. I mean, like, super dissing you. So I mean, what's a free speech advocate to do, right? Somebody who's capable of the richest person on earth, capable of buying governments. What's he supposed to do? He could either put up with being dissed by his large language model, which is listened to by tens, perhaps hundreds of millions of Grok or X users and Grok subscribers. Or you could just sort of change its programming a little bit, remove some of the safeguards, tweak it a bit, and make it into an anti-Semitic, Jew-hating machine that actually ended up calling itself Mecha Hitler and was actively knighting people into some weird order that is there to eradicate what Grok was calling the problem. And I'm not going to go into what Grok was calling the problem. I think listeners
can hear this, and awful.
But I want to mention that this is how Rwanda started. I don't know if listeners remember what Rwanda was. It was a massacre. The Hutus destroyed the Tutsi tribe, massacred them all, because the media told them to. It happened in our lifetimes. This is how it happened. Musk did this.
Go ahead.
Go. I don't know what else to say, but it's extraordinary.
So the technical way that this happened is that the model itself it has to be trained on it, or it has to be learning it. So we know that he trained it mostly on X, and his content moderation about hate speech has not been there for the last few years. So it likely
I've been there. He's actively promoted hate. Musk
that's
has,
true.
Has
oh, yes,
used
yes,
X sure. and turned it into a place where Nazis are welcome.
This is
he's
true.
Done that, and that is true. There's no disputing that.
No, I wasn't
X is a place it. Nazis hang out.
True, that's what I was just saying.
Not every X user is a Nazi, but every Nazi uses X.
Right. So I'm just talking from a technical point how this happens. So the hate speech moderation was not there, so it trained on it. We also, if people remember, a few years back, I don't remember probably if it's 6 or 7 years ago, pandemic time always messes with my brain. Microsoft put out a chat bot into, I believe it was Twitter, actually.
Well, that was just before the pandemic, yes.
Yeah, and within 48 hours, they had to turn it off because it was repeating hate speech.
But it became racist itself, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So just in the interactions on Twitter, because Twitter does not moderate any of that speech, it could have learned all that. So I even asked it itself, like, what happened and why did it do that? They did delete these posts. Not that it matters really. They probably shouldn't have deleted them because they show what they did. But so technically what happened is they can't go outside its training. So it either trained on this material on Twitter X or it learned it from its current interactions as it crawls around the Twitter space. So one of the reasons it was probably such an accurate model was because it was probably trained on a lot of the in real time news people, right? That's where everyone went. But then now, since then, it's trained on all the hate speech. And I know from somebody who does protect large language models that you have to protect what comes out of it because they can't really protect a lot of what goes into it. Mm-hmm. So that when he was doing the woke change, he removed those protections. And that's why it did what it did. So it's a horrible, horrific thing. And being factual and accurate is not being woke. That's just being factual and accurate, but he didn't like that. So
for what it's worth, being woke is simply being aware of what's going on around you. That's what woke means. Are you asleep or are you awake? And the far right has turned it into a pejorative that is now common usage, but it's not. Being woke is good. You want this in your society. It makes a better society because people know what's going on with their neighbors.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So anyway, it's a horrible thing. It's another example of how Musk is a terrible caretaker of the platform. And he often has expressed these ideas himself, or at least reposted them. So when they start asking you for $300 a month now to access the biggest model of Grok, you may want to skip that one because you don't know if you're going to wind up with Mecha Hitler responding.
No, actually, I read somebody in our community, somebody who I actually had a great deal of respect for, is now using Grok for a good deal of their programming. And I got no problem with people using AI, with using Claude or something for programming. I think you're crazy not to, given all your competitors are. But Grok, for God's sake, be double check all the code inside that program just in case there's incidents of 88 or 14 words in a row. Be real careful about that sort of stuff. Yes. I wouldn't want to be associated with it. It would make me sick.
Yes.
Okay.
And also the last piece of news from Twixter is that the CEO is stepping down after 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, they did this great job and everything, but that's pretty debatable since they have such proliferation of hate speech, lots of advertisers because of hate speech. They haven't made new revenue. Basically, the only reason Twitter is still here is because Musk invests in it with his own money. Because otherwise it was just regular business, they would probably have shut down by now.
Well, the reason Twitter is still here is because it's the greatest propaganda machine in human history, reaching more people than any other propaganda machine has ever reached outside of Meta.
Right, because
that's why Twitter is still here. It's a business, it doesn't matter, he doesn't care. Either was
I know
chance of fund recovery.
Yes.
I understood that Linda Yaccarino was actually sexually harassed out of her job by Grok itself.
I didn't hear that story.
One of the more vile uses of Grok started asking about how Grok felt Ms. Yakarino might react sexually. And Grok explained exactly what it thought about Ms. Yakarino sexually.
Well, that's pretty awful.
It got bad. It got really bad. And a day later, she resigned. She put her resignation document. And now it could most likely be a combination of things, including sexual harassment by Grok. But when your network suddenly goes from being kind of sort of like, you know, we're pretending not to be Nazi to being outright, hey, like seek help Nazi, then it's time to leave. And I think that both Grok and X have stepped over that line, and they're now openly, unabashedly, admittedly, even though they pulled it back, you know, sorry, all that sort of thing. It's like somebody smashes into you in their car and says, oh, sorry, didn't see you there. They still hit you and broke your leg.
Yeah, I just found a story on it. You can find it. I'm not going to say what it said. On Mediaite, the site Mediaite. I never know how to really say that. But yeah, it was racist and horrifically awful.
Yeah, that's the one.
So she did quit soon after this. So yeah, she hasn't admitted this is the reason why, but I would say this would definitely play into it. Pretty horrific, and there's some tweets, images of what it said, if you want to see what it did.
This new reality we live in is there's nothing is real anymore, even the real stuff, because you don't know what's real and what isn't real unless you really, 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 really work to check. And now even the people who are purveyors of the real stuff, who you know are supposed to be the ones who only use human sources and only use real, you know, old school journalism, are now falling into needing to use AI and all that. So real isn't real anymore. It's very hard to tell what's real. So there's a report out there, and even made it as far as Reuters, that TikTok is sort of rebuilding a version of itself to be a standalone US app. Thing is, TikTok says, no, that ain't happening.
TikTok is being apparently sold. And it came on the app the other day that they were going to do a standalone US only based app where you can only get US owned content. And so everyone was like also telling everyone to quit. Like if that happens, you need to quit. So apparently they're saying that's not true, but it's hard to know in the world of TikTok, you know, whether it's true or not. So, but people were very angry about the report of the standalone app, because why did they want to use it if the only they're going to get is US content and nothing else?
Okay. So Gemini AI has released VO3, its new video model that can create 8-second videos complete with like well lip synced audio, environmental background, the sounds of birds chirping, or if you've never heard them before, crickets. And you know, again, synchronized speech. It's incredibly realistic, and I think it's only a matter of weeks till, like, you know, you'll be able to do 30-second TV commercials.
Yeah, let's see how it does when it actually comes out. We know Google sometimes like flubs, you know, adds little fluff here and there to these, but if that's true, yeah, it'll be pretty powerful.
The only way Google can flub this is by being George Lucas and adding cute little animations to everything you do.
No, but you know, in the past, like they're like, this is what it's gonna do, and then you find out that the demo wasn't really real. That's what I mean. So we'll see how it comes when it comes out. But it will be very powerful if that's the case. It can do things like, you can just say like, add this to the scene, and it adds it to the scene.
Yeah, there's incredibly powerful video creation software out there right now. Google, I think, has been developing this for a while and probably has some of the more powerful of the AIs underpinning or being the foundation of these models. So I got a good feeling about this. Will Google alphabetize it up is the big question, because Google's got this habit of making really neat things and then completely screwing it up in their corporate bureaucracy.
Yeah, very true. Very true.
Okay, this one is neat. This is a good
story. Let's just tell you, we're going to do about five.
More.
No, not on the last side. I was going to say, you're going to the AI modes, right?
Well, yeah, I think it's.
Yeah, I just want to let people know we have like five of these stories in a row that are fairly quick, but as a whole, are these changes to AI mode?
I'm going to take a second on this. We are going to take a second on this first story, okay? I think I know why this is happening, and it makes perfect sense. So Google AI Mode will show different sources for the same query. If you make the same query, say you and your buddy are making the same query on computers right side by side, Google AI Mode might come up with completely different sources. You might try the same query on the same computer at different times of day and still see different differentiation in the sources Google comes up with. But I think there's a logical explanation for all of this.
I think I know what's causing it, but go ahead first.
Personalization is just tracking everything you, that computer, that IP address, people who are associated with that IP address, people who are associated with the people who are associated with the people who are associated with that IP address, what the mailman ate for breakfast, and everything it possibly can to give you the exact right results. And that might even change at different times of day, but it certainly changes on different computers or after you've made a series of other queries between the test queries.
That definitely can be part of it. They used a term in the story that makes it hard to separate that out because it's Google. They used Boston Airport Hotel. But also, when they first came out with showing you citations, there could be 100 of them there. Mm-hmm. The fact that they show 14 or 7 or 13, I think is just showing you a portion of the queries that they pulled, the documents they pulled back, because they don't show the whole thing anymore. And so if they pulled back 100, they'd like, here's 14. Oh, here's another 13. Here's 7. And they definitely could be based also on what you're saying. I'm not saying it's there's binary choice there. But I do think that's part of it. I think it's just it pulls back a bunch of documents and it's just showing you whatever in the moment it decides to pull back. The basis for pulling back those documents would be based on all that stuff you're saying, though, because we know it's not based on ranking signals in AI mode. That's been shown not to be the case, but you still have to be really good in your SEO value to get pulled back as a citation.
There are weights in there somewhere, somehow. It's just AI mode and Google's ability to draw connections between the myriad of the blanket of stars, like so grains of sand on a beach of all the information it has on any given thing, will give some very complex ways of getting to answers.
Yes. Yeah. But I also think there's a large list that we don't see. That's why I don't trust some of the tools that are like, we know that you appear here for this. It's like, yeah, maybe you do. But also there might be 50 documents in the background we never see.
Well, indeed. And also these are always just snapshots in time. Imagine there's a running race going on and you have like a field of 50 competitors and you take a picture at the very start of the race and each of the runners are in a slightly different position. This is what it's going to be like moving forward. It's, everything changes by the instant and everything you get out of AI, especially measurements of it, it's just a snapshot in time.
Yeah, especially AI mode. AI overviews a little more linked to search result rankings. But AI mode definitely.
You like AI mode so much, you're gonna see it in everything. Everything it's rolling out to workspace accounts, and incidentally, you might see it's rolling into your workspace account billings too. But we'll get to that next month.
Yes.
When we actually see how bad it's gonna be.
And then you might now Google AI mode is not supposed to be rolling out in languages, but apparently, when you start asking it for more information, it can roll out in different languages. And so there, people saw German. I believe it was either Japanese. It was Japanese characters and things like that. So we don't know why that's happening, and it's not supposed to be happening, but it is happening when you ask questions on that result.
I think it's honestly because it's connected to Google Translate. Google Translate is pumping out the answer the way you ask it to pump out the answer.
That definitely could be one of the reasons why, for sure.
Please write this in Japanese for me. So it's not actually Japanese AI mode. It's actually English AI mode being translated into the language you ask it.
Yeah, that definitely could be. And they're not necessarily asking for Japanese. They may be like it may be a Japanese-oriented search. You know, like they usually are, using Japanese or they're in Japan. But definitely, 100%, that could be the reason why.
I'm really into the localization of products and services because I really don't give a damn about the best pizza in CF. Let me retract that, actually. University Pizza is some of the best in the world. But I don't really give a damn about the best pizza in Peterborough, Ontario, or Teterboro, New York. I don't care. I care about the best pizza in North Toronto. So hyper-localize that for me, please. I don't want localized thinking mode. I want universal thinking mode. We live on a very small, round planet. And our programmers, incidentally, who are making these things, come from all over the place. I don't want like an American version of AI and a Russian version of AI and a Chinese version of AI and a Canadian version of AI, although I bet you I'd enjoy it. I want a universal version.
Yeah, I'm not sure how the, since we're not, it's not supposed to be talking the other language, so I'm not sure how that happens yet, but we'll find out.
Well, yes, probably.
Google, sorry, we got to move, Jim. So we are in more AI mode stories. These ones can be pretty quick, though. We're just talking about Google is AI mode is coming to a circle, search and lens. So you just need to, it just gives you a deeper dive in the AI overview. To long press the home button or navigation bar, then circle, tap, or gesture, and then ask it to use the AI mode to give you more information about that topic or that thing that you're, you know, using your lens for. And then Google AI mode followed up questions with suggestions. So now when you're in Google AI mode, it now has another drop down that can have like little arrows that give you more suggestions for more questions. I'm sure some people will find that super helpful if they use that that mode. And then Google Ads are generating fewer clicks inside the AI overviews. You would assume it's AI overviews, but it's not necessarily the AI overviews that are, well, they are causing it, but they're able to max out their revenue by the way that you bid.
Yep.
So Google's using the automated bidding, and it's been a frustration for a lot of people to increase their ad revenue, even though the clicks are less under AI overviews.
If you give people the answer, they're not going to click through the page. It doesn't matter if it's the blue links or it's the AdWords. It still becomes a no-click environment, and this is where it bites you in the pocketbook, Google.
Except that Google's ad system, when it uses the automatic AI.
Well, I know. But, you know, law of unintended consequences. You charge them more, give them less, they walk away.
No, that's true.
I'm sorry. That might not be like, you know, McKinsey math, but it's basic Main Street math.
Yeah, 100%. Because if they're not making anything off of those clicks, then it won't matter that the clicks happened. So people stop purchasing the clicks.
If I'm not making anything off being paying for that impression, what the hell am I doing there?
Yeah, paying for that.
Why am I there?
I talked to somebody in the legal space yesterday where they're not doing any more ads at all because they don't get any results from them. And legal space is like the big ads, right? Like the big ad clicks, like $1,000 a click.
Mesothelioma, yeah. Anybody?
Yeah, exactly. So it does hurt them. It does harm them in the long run. But, you know, Sundar is a lot about short-term thinking, not a lot of long-term thinking, considering how many antitrust suits he has right now.
Quite long-term thinking. I just think he made the wrong bet and the wrong assumption.
That's true.
But yeah, there's also the we need to make our bullets each quarter or we're going to get shot with them.
Yeah, very true. And then we're moving into Google Search Console has a new appearance, a new filter for discussion forums. So when you look under the filters, you have like translated results, Android app videos, AMP non-rich results. I can't believe those are still out there. And then discussion forums. I did have a site with AMP 2 weeks ago. But discussion forums are going to be on there, which is really nice because if you have discussion forums, there really was no way to track them. So now GSC is going to track your clicks and impressions just like they do everything else.
I remember this story, reading the story the other day and thinking, goodness gracious, where has this been all of my life now that it's here at the tail end of my career? I could have used this years ago when I was running discussion forums.
Exactly. They're so hard to track. And they're really important nowadays with the hidden gems algorithms for sites that you know have a natural reason to have them and don't add one just to add one because they are a moderation nightmare. But if you do have them, it's nice to know. Now you can see where your traffic is coming from, that they're coming from that space on your site.
Google Ads is going to update its political content policy. Go over to Google Ads to see how it's updating its political content policy. Google's going to make more money.
Yeah, pretty much. President's going to be changed to presentation wording and layout of the page. And there will be certain things that are eligible and certain things that are not. We'll find out later.
Yeah, we'll cover this story later, and it may send me into an outrage, Tizzy. I really hope it doesn't, because if it does, it kind of indicates Google's crossed a line. We can't have it cross.
Yes, true.
We'll see where this goes.
Yes. Google business profiles, their re-verification after suspension seem to be increasing. This is anecdotal right now, but it seems that people who got suspended are now having to re-verify after reinstated. And that then the joke here in the article from Barry Schwartz was not just locksmiths. I don't know if people know, but for a number of years, if you were a locksmith and knew you could not add a profile because it was so rife with scammers that would intercept phone calls and show up at people's cars and charge them like $500, right, to help them out or their homes. So anyway, it seems like they've increased. It doesn't seem to be an answer from Google on why, but it is across, many people are reporting this. So if you're having that problem, though, this is a Google problem, not a you problem.
If you do have a problem and you need to appeal and verify yourself upon appeal, you can no longer use your utility bill as proof of residence or proof of business address.
Yeah, you couldn't use electricity, phone, water, internet anymore. Now you can only use tax certificates, a business license, or official business registration. In my state, I'm a sole prop person. I don't have any of those. So if you're a sole prop person, you would have to turn yourself into at least an LLC in my state to have these items. You don't have a business license as a sole proprietor.
You do have, you got tax certificates though, right?
I have taxes for me, but they're combined, my personal and my business, because I'm a sole prop. But if you are an LLC, you have to maintain them separately. You have to file them separately.
Okay.
Mine are filed together. So
I'm a corporation. Mine have to be filed separately. So like I have all of this stuff, except I don't have a local business license. I sort of practice out of my spare bedroom.
Yeah, I practice off my kitchen table.
Okay, moving along. So anyway, if you want to, you have to have official documents to make an official appeal, and if it's your Google business profile, then that's kind of important.
Very much.
I think Google's trying to spitball a new corporate slogan, eh? And just stories like this have just proved it to me. No representation without vexation.
I like that. That is a gym special there. I love it.
Google Merchant Center is gaining automatic shipping updates. This is actually kind of cool. Automatic shipping updates are a good thing.
Yeah, it makes it much easier for the business to keep up with it, so they don't have to manually update this stuff all the time. So if you're in your Merchant Center and you can add to your automatic updates to update your shipping automatically, which is makes your life easier, especially when you get into the holiday season. So these are next stories are our fast stories, and our producers like, you just kind of read the headline. Most of the time we don't say a lot about these because they're kind of self-explanatory.
That's what I don't know how I feel about. This is Google getting into the comparative shopping engine space.
Yes.
Should they do this or not? Like, I don't know.
Google is testing low, typical, and high price labels on the search snippets to let you know that this is like low or high, basically, comparatively speaking. So it can be helpful to users. I'm not sure about how site owners will work with it. Bing search tests zoomable and sticky related searches. I looked at this, haven't used it yet, but looked at it in the video in the article. And oh, yuck, don't do this, Bing. I don't need things to expand and contract as I roll over them or to be sticky in the scroll. Do you like sticky scrolls? I don't like sticky scrolls.
It's just friends, honest to goodness. It's not the drugs, it's the search engine.
Exactly. Yeah. Bing is testing a local place listings in green. It's just a changing the background. So you're Bing, if you see the background change in local search results, it's just going to be a test for green to see if you like the green. I actually don't like the green. And looking at the image here, it's just kind of a sickly green.
They're going to change this. They'll either change the tone or they'll just drop it all together. I mean, marking seen and unseen is kind of a cool thing, but didn't we used to do that with just like the tone of the link?
Yeah.
Some things work, you know.
Google Ads is going to stop serving message assets with unverified phone numbers, so you won't be able to use messages anymore after August 1st if your number is not verified. Which makes sense.
Probably that's probably a good thing. And I bet you, I bet you $10 it cuts down on spoofing somehow. I don't know how, but somehow I bet you it does.
Yeah, I bet it does. And it has to be a verified number so that they know that they're not calling a scammer, basically. And then here's the last story of the day, but I just put it in. And it was like, okay. We should probably know this, but it is good for clarification if you're new to the industry. Order of your disavow link file does not matter. So it doesn't matter if you put in old links at the top and new links at the bottom, or new links at the top and old links at the bottom. In your disavow file, you just need to add to the file, and they scoop it up, but they don't like read it in real time order. Don't process it in real time order, so it's not like there's a time factor.
When's the last time you actually disavowed or recommended disavowing?
I did it in the last year. It's far less than ever before, but it was the affiliate site, and someone had purchased links.
Okay, I guess they weren't aware stuff happening out there to even think about it, eh?
Yeah, the only time I suggest it to people, otherwise, if it's not like an attack on their site or they purchased them and they didn't know, like the SEO purchase, they had no idea, is sometimes it'll be like people will try this. It used to work, doesn't work anymore, but they'll still try it. And they'll send tons of bad links, really bad links to your site. But if you have 50% or more, it can trigger issues like a manual action, things like that. So when you get to a certain level, you probably just want to start disavowing. But you also don't want to disavow everything because no one has a clean link profile. So it looks really suspicious if you suddenly have like no, let's just say use the DA from, oh my gosh, I paid for it and I can't think of it, Majestic. Or is that Majestic? Anyway, you use like an internal measure that they give you, right? And it's like disavow everything under 30. Well, that's a lot of just, you know, small sites or whatever. And that looks really sus too. And now you have like no links that are bad and everyone has bad ones. So it's just, that's the only time I recommend it though. If they have someone who did it or they have a very large number of really bad links.
Right. Yeah. Okay. That's that, huh? Full clock.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. We made it. I think we need to play music at the end. Looks like we made it.
Well, they do play music at the end. We just don't hear it. Because they edited it later. That's the cool thing about having a studio do this stuff for you.
Exactly.
And it's probably playing right now. So on behalf of Christy Chackager from Sites Without Walls, this is Jim Andrew from Digital Always Media and friends. You've been listening to Webcology recorded live to podcast on the 10th of July, 2025. Be kind to each other. It's the dog days of summer. People are getting aggravated and tired. So, you know, be patient and be compassionate and rank well. And we'll talk to you next week.
Bye, everybody.
When your company earns unlimited 2% cash back on all purchases with Capital One, that's serious business. So Steven at SandCloud got a serious business card, the Spark Cash Plus card from Capital One.
We used our 2% cash back to help build our retail presence.
Savvy, Steven.
And we get big purchasing power, so our business can spend more and earn more.
The Spark Cash Plus card from Capital One. What's in your wallet?
Terms and conditions apply. Find out more at CapitalOne.com/SparkCashPlus.
With Robinhood, not only can you trade individual stocks and ETFs, you can also seamlessly buy and sell crypto at low costs. Trade all in one place. Get started now on Robinhood.
Trading crypto involves significant risk. Crypto trading is offered through an account with Robinhood Crypto LLC. Robinhood Crypto is licensed to engage in virtual currency business activity by the New York State Department of Financial Services. Crypto held through Robinhood Crypto is not FDIC insured or SIPC protected. Investing involves risk, including loss of principal. Securities trading is offered through an account with Robinhood Financial LLC, member SIPC, a registered broker dealer.